Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Weekend Worm, a special edition that recaps the top stories of the past week, a heads up on what the newsroom is following as we move into the future. It is the third weekend of August 2026, Saturday the 15th and Sunday the 16th. I'm Carl Lingle. From the latest National Weather Service discussion on the region's weather, another cooler day in store today, Saturday, with showers and thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms will be capable of heavy rain today, and trending warmer this weekend, though afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms will remain. Wildfire smoke continues to pour across Montana, the West, and the rest of the U.S., fed by fires that are stressing the firefighting capabilities of the nation. On Monday, there were 142 new fires reported nationwide by the National Interagency Fire Center, the country's support center for wildland firefighting, including 12 new large fires. The Northwest remains the nation's most active fire area with 45 uncontained large fires, many exhibiting active or extreme fire behavior with evacuations and closures in effect, and homes, communities, and critical infrastructure threatened. 240 soldiers from Joint Base Lewis-McChord, based in Washington State, were deployed in support of firefighting operations at the Modrite Fire in the northeast part of that state. Montana National Guard personnel and a Chinook CH-47 helicopter left Tuesday to join some two dozen other states in sending resources for firefighting support. So far this year, firefighters have responded to more than 46,000 wildfires nationwide that have burned nearly 6.5 million acres. That's 126% to 156% of the 10-year average. The acrid wildfire smoke blanketing western Montana is making everyone feel lousy, and health officials say we should take steps to reduce our exposure. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien filed this report.
Feeling especially tired, irritable, unfocused, physically ill, and even depressed these days? You're not the only one. Heavy wildfire smoke from Oregon and Washington is making air quality across the state unhealthy, which comes with health impacts. Missoula public health officials Monday said that when air quality is rated as unhealthy or worse, everyone should reduce or avoid long or intense outdoor activity. For those who don't have a choice and must be outside under these circumstances, a cloth mask or bandana won't cut it. They're unable to filter out the tiny particles that make us sick. Health officials recommend wearing N95 or KN95 masks. They're specifically designed to capture 95% of those tiny particles. Weather forecasters say there's a chance western Montana may get some temporary relief from the dense smoke by midweek. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
Fire restrictions tightened this week in two additional western Montana counties. Lands in Granite County, managed by Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, will be under Stage 2 fire restrictions this week. FWP lands in Mineral County also moved to Stage 2 as of Friday. Under those restrictions, several activities are prohibited, including building fires and using internal combustion engines from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. in West Central Montana, Missoula, and Ravalli counties, and their FWP lands are already in Stage 2 restrictions. Despite all of the weather and smoke, Yellowstone National Park drew nearly 1 million visitors last month. However, the National Park Service says that number still represents a 2% decrease from the total seen in July of last year. So far this year, more than 2.6 million people have visited Yellowstone. That's a 1% decrease when compared to the same time frame a year ago, but still relatively close to the park's record-setting 2021 pace. Farmer advocates around the region are once again irritated by the stalled federal farm bill. They say lawmakers have lost sight of the foundation of bipartisan support the process was founded on, and farmers have been left to suffer because of it amid worsening economic conditions. Judith Ruiz Brench with Prairie News Service reports.
The Senate Agriculture Committee failed to advance the legislation last week. Matt Perdue with the North Dakota Farmers Union says the current draft isn't likely to meet all of the challenges farmers may face in the years ahead. However, he notes several areas of progress, like efforts to address consolidation in the fertilizer market, advancing mandatory country of origin labeling, and expanding year-round E15 fuel access.
But the bottom line is, we need to have bipartisan support to get this across the finish line. We have been working on this bill for 3 years. In those 3 years, conditions in the farm economy have eroded. And so, yes, we're frustrated.
Disagreements over a provision that would require states to pay for the SNAP program remain the biggest obstacle. Perdue notes changes made in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act are likely to create challenges for states and people who rely on food assistance benefits. Lawmakers are expected to vote again on the farm bill package in September. I'm Judith Ruiz Branch reporting.
7 in 10 Americans say they support unions, and worker interest in joining them is at historic highs. But just 1 in 10 are currently members. Eric Galatis with Wyoming News Service has more.
Most of the 50 million people in Wyoming and across the nation who say they want a union contract can't get one due to federal and state labor laws, according to a new Economic Policy Institute report. Co-author Heidi Shearholtz with the Economic Policy Institute says tripling the number of union members would bring widespread benefits, including boosting public schools, expanding access to health care, and increasing wages to help families pay for the rising cost of just about everything.
Almost every conversation about affordability focuses entirely on prices, as if the only way to make life more affordable is to make things cheaper. But affordability depends on both prices and pay.
For decades, corporations have warned Americans about the potential costs of joining a union, including dues workers have to pay and the risk of losing jobs if companies can't stay competitive. Amazon, Starbucks, and others invest millions in union avoidance strategies and make the case to their workers that companies are best positioned to take care of their own. I'm Eric Galatis.
Montana's Attorney General has joined with 6 colleagues from other states in urging federal regulators to reject an updated proposed merger of 2 freight railroad companies. In their letter to the Surface Transportation Board, AG Austin Knutson and the others claim the planned combination of Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern would reduce competition and increase costs for consumers. The railroads insist the merger will allow them to compete more effectively with Canadian railroads, allow for more shipping options, and help to grow international trade. Earlier this year, Knutson urged the feds to reject the initial merger plan. Regulators also asked the railroads for more information. Montana Secretary of State Christy Jacobson is blasting an out-of-state company for scamming Montana businesses. Wednesday of this week, Jacobson ordered a cease and desist on Annual Filing Report Service, LLC, the company mailing fraudulent forms titled Form 5102 Mandatory Beneficial Ownership Reporting that solicit payments of about $120 from businesses. These mailings first hit Montana in July. The U.S. Department of the Treasury warns these and anything else referencing Form 5102 are scams. In a release, Jacobson said she will aggressively defend Montana businesses against out-of-state entities looking to, quote, line their pockets by deceiving our hard-working employers. A Yellowstone County judge has ruled that data center opponents cannot continue to collect signatures for a proposed November ballot measure, which would require public approval for such facilities. This follows an earlier ruling that found the deadline for collecting signatures had already passed under a recently enacted state law. In a statement obtained by Yellowstone Public Radio, organizers with Yellowstone County Voices say they are disappointed, pointing to the time spent collecting signatures to this point, while criticizing what they describe as an obscure new law. They go on to say the effort brought awareness to the issue, and their efforts have only begun. The deadline has passed for Montana candidates to withdraw from their races, and all Senate candidates are still in the running, but not without a last-minute push to get the Democrat to drop out. Montana Public Radio's Clayton Murphy filed the story this week.
The day is starting to heat up in East Helena. A small crowd is gathering in Main Street Park. It's August 10th, the last chance for Montana candidates to change their minds before ballots are finalized. 5 hours before the deadline, voters gather to see Democratic candidate for Senate Alani Bankhead announce one more time that she has no intention of dropping out.
There has been a lot of noise about this race, so let me cut through it, plain and simple. I am in this race to win it, and I am staying through November 3rd.
Yay! Bankhead won her party's primary, but both voters and some prominent Democrats have been pressuring her to quit and make room for a prominent independent candidate, Seth Bodner, who has already raised more money than her and Republican Kurt Almy combined. The day before the deadline, Bankhead said on social media that she's being harassed to drop out and fears for her family's safety. She said her family is taking personal and legal actions to protect against threats. On Tuesday, Emily Marburger, the executive director of the Montana Democratic Party, pinned the attack on the independent candidate Seth Bodner, though she didn't name him explicitly.
It seems that the independent candidate had no plan other than to get on the ballot and then enlist bullies to go after the Democratic nominee with intimidation tactics that threatened her safety and her family's safety.
Jim and Terry Gunderson have lived in Townsend for 27 years. Both voted for Bankhead in the primary. But after a campaign event in town last week where voters asked her to back out, neither was sure they'd stick with the Democrat in November.
It was an eye-opener.
We just want to see Almy be defeated. And whatever that takes might be the way it has to go.
If Republican incumbent Steve Daines was running, there'd be less hope from opposition. But he's retiring. And the field is clear.
Washington's reckless spending has left us with inflation and enormous debt. It's time to fix the broken system.
That's Kurt Almy in a political ad. He left his job as U.S. Attorney for Montana to be the Republican candidate. He's never held elected office, but jumped into the race at Daines' behest at the 11th hour. Almy's lack of name recognition and President Trump's plunging poll numbers are reason independent candidate Seth Bodner thinks he can win. He says Montanans don't like either party and are hungry for a new choice.
Now, this battle in Montana today is not between Republicans and Democrats. It's between the extreme and the rest of us.
On the day of the deadline, Bodner said he respected Bankhead's decision to stay in, but claimed she has, quote, no clear path to the resources it takes to compete statewide. Since no one dropped out, Republican Almy is almost guaranteed victory, says Cal Muniz, a political science professor at Montana State University.
Even if she were to only garner 10% of the vote in the state, that would just be disaster for Bodner's hopes of potentially being able to flip control of the seat.
Almy hasn't commented on the other candidates' choices to stay in the race. In Helena, I'm Clayton Murphy.
A Libby medical clinic that diagnoses and treats people with asbestos-related diseases abruptly closed this week. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has more.
The Libby Card Clinic received federal funding for years. Congress set up the clinic and gave Libby area residents Medicare benefits because exposure to asbestos in the community was so widespread. Contaminated vermiculite from a now-closed mine was used for insulation and in gardens. It was even spread on the local baseball fields where children played. The Card Clinic lost its federal funding earlier this year and had planned to close at the end of this month. But a post on its Facebook page says the clinic is closing early, quote, due to unforeseen circumstances beyond Card's control. A request for comment from the clinic's director was not returned by deadline. The clinic says it's taking requests for the release of medical records but may not have the staff to process them. The clinic says it's consulting with government agencies and lawyers to figure out next steps for releasing patients' medical files. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Montana's first domestically acquired cases of cyclosporiasis are being reported amid the thousands of cases being tracked this summer by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The state's Department of Public Health and Human Services tells Yellowstone Public Radio Montana's three known cases are not linked to the large multi-state outbreak involving lettuce. None of the recalled food has been found in this state at this point. Two of the cases have been linked to out-of-state travel. The third may also involve an out-of-state exposure, but officials say a Montana connection cannot be ruled out. Six previously reported cases were associated with international travel. West Nile virus has again shown up in Montana. It's expected to be around through at least October. The state's Department of Public Health and Human Services says two mosquito pools in Roosevelt County have tested positive for the virus. The infection is spread through mosquito bites. Symptoms of the illness can include flu-like fatigue and body aches, though many who are infected remain asymptomatic. About 1 in 150 human cases result in severe disease. Horses can also be infected, though there is an equine vaccine for the virus. Experts recommend the use of insect repellents, dressing to cover as much exposed skin as possible, limiting outdoor activity around dawn and dusk, and the clearing of standing water near homes. Wyoming's Rural Healthcare Advisory Committee, made up of elected officials, hospital owners, and other healthcare professionals from around Wyoming, dove into the Department of Health's recommendations for the Rural Health Transformation Fund this week. Wyoming Public Radio's Jordan Uplinger reported.
The newly created Rural Health Transformation Advisory Committee distributed over $200 million of federal award money, helping to promote training medical staff, expanding services at hospitals, and supporting maternal care. Members of the committee focused on emergency medical services, awarding over $23 million to 12 districts, local governments, and hospitals to begin regionalizing over the next few years. But Carbon County Commissioner Sue Jones says that it's a long-term challenge.
Regionalization is a good idea. It works if it's set up correctly. We all have built our own little kingdoms, and getting out of those kingdoms is going to be interesting.
Critical access hospitals are set to get more than $48 million. $18 million is earmarked for graduate medical education programs, and $35 million will pay for workforce education support. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Jordan Uplinger.
It's been more than a month since Montana rolled out new Medicaid work requirements, and budget experts say they don't know much about how it's going so far. Laura Hatch with Big Sky Connection has the story.
On July 1st, Montana started requiring Medicaid enrollees to work 80 hours a month, attend school or training, or qualify for an exemption. Heather O'Loughlin is with the Montana Budget and Policy Center, a nonpartisan, nonprofit group focused on how policies can help low and moderate income earners in the state. She says Montana's health department hasn't released updated information.
The state has not yet reported publicly how many individuals have received notification, how many have been determined in compliance or exempt through ex parte data, or how many Montanans they believe to be out of compliance.
Ex parte data refers to information the health department already has from case files and other resources to determine eligibility. Medicaid's community engagement requirements, more commonly called work requirements, were part of the Republicans' H.R. 1 budget bill passed in July 2025. The health department says the changes will help enrollees rely less on the government and increase personal responsibility. Montana is the second state to start the requirements early. Nebraska began enforcing them on May 1st. I'm Laura Hatch, reporting.
Oral arguments began this week in a case over whether transgender and non-gender-conforming Montanans can use the bathroom that aligns with their gender identity. In 2025, Montana lawmakers passed a law requiring people to use restrooms that align with their biological sex at birth. The Montana ACLU sued over the law, and a Missoula County court prevented it from being enacted earlier this year. The Missoula court hearing arguments will decide whether the state is permanently barred from implementing the law. Homeless services in Billings say they're rushing to meet the demand for housing and temporary shelter. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche has more from a tour of the Montana Rescue Mission's new campus in Billings.
On Tuesday afternoon, Billings Leadership Foundation Executive Director Diane Romaine leads legislators through the emergency shelter floor of the Montana Rescue Mission.
This is our expansion area. So this used to be a wood shop.
There are currently 57 beds available in their emergency shelter, where Christopher Padilla is in the process of transitioning into long-term recovery.
You caught me in my monkey suit on the way in.
Padilla had a job interview earlier in the day.
So it seems like a very nice place. You know, it's a higher-end restaurant.
The Montana Rescue Mission and its partners provide medical care, food, and shelter for men, women, and families on its campus on Billings' south side. Its location includes a cafeteria, multiple lounges, a health clinic, and outdoor spaces. Staff say its long-term recovery program has more than doubled since April to over 70 people. Romaine says there's also a need to accommodate more families and children at the rescue mission.
There are a lot of agencies in our community that deal with families, but they're also at capacity. And so we're seeing more and more families. We've had up to 22 children at one time within our shelter.
The Montana Rescue Mission is working to provide housing for seniors and more programming for people at different stages of sobriety. Expansion of the emergency shelter will add 35 beds, with plans to wrap up by winter. In Billings, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Finally, we'll go back to Edward O'Brien for this report. The climate phenomenon known as El Niño is building a major head of steam in the Pacific Ocean. More now on what that might mean for Montana's autumn and winter weather.
El Niño occurs when sea surface temperatures in the tropical Pacific Ocean are warmer than average. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, there's a nearly 70% chance this year's El Niño will be the strongest since 1950. If that pans out, it would be the most powerful El Niño on record. NOAA's Michelle LaRue tells MTPR this increases the odds of a warmer and drier than average late fall through spring in Montana. LaRue says there are no guarantees. Even a strong El Niño just tilts the odds in favor of expected impacts. She says scientists are having a, quote, robust discussion about whether climate change is behind the power of this year's El Niño, adding so far there is no consensus. LaRue notes very strong events like this seem to occur every 10 to 15 years. The last one happened during the winter of 2015-2016. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
That's the Weekend Worm for this third weekend of August 2026. Catch up with us Monday morning for the next edition of The Worm. I'm Carl Lengel. Have a great weekend.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.